Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm. You already know what time it is. We have one awesome sport weekend go down this past weekend, Saturday and Sunday. That's right. I'm not excluding any day. Hey, we can even talk about Friday night. But welcome to the Monday night sport wrap-up. We got a lot of stuff to jump into, to review the stuff that went down, preview what's going on tonight. We got a game that's taking off right now. That's right. We got the Cavs and the Bulls. Well, let me say it right. The Bulls are visiting the Cavs. Cleveland's hosting them. But this is going to be one awesome game one in both respective games and also the Western Conference. I can't overlook that situation. You got the Clippers visiting the Rockets. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, welcome to the wrap-up. I went a little overboard with it. I just wanted to hear it, man. I got my head banging a little bit. The call the number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in this world, but you're here with the chefs, man. Thank you for everybody for the participation following us tonight after the wrap-up. We got the Armored Champions taking flight. You know, they usually start off the month. They give you one show a month, and we got the co-host himself, being the star of the show with Alan Fisher, TV show. I'm still proud, and you know, I can't believe he's working with the Sports City. Check him out on Game of Arms on the AMC channel, and Carolyn runs the show with him. Awesome stuff. So check him out afterwards. Spread the word, you know, Twitter, whatever you need to do, get the word out there. I also got to talk to our Twitter, too, just to get the word out there. We're doing a lot of running around before I got into the kitchen, but I got cooked. So without any further ado, I got my co-host with me, getting ready to deal with these dishes, calling in by way of the state of South Carolina, the New Yorker himself from the borough of Brooklyn. You guys know him as Chandler Knight, a.k.a. Nostradamus. Mr. Knight, welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
What's going on, man?
See, how are you feeling, sir? How are you feeling?
I'm here.
Okay. Is this Sports City? All right, I got to get him his coffee. I'm going to spark him up immediately. I'm not even going to take no time. That's right. I'm going to spark him up right now. So, since I have to give you a cup of coffee all the time before you get into the kitchen, I'm going to wake you up. Your thoughts on your boys. That's right. The New York Yankees playing some good baseball right now. They're streaking. They just swept the Red Sox in Boston. A-Rod hit his 660th home run, and I mean, if you want to speculate on A-Rod, you want to talk about him, a lot of people still point fingers at him from his past or what, so, I mean, I want us to get into it as best as possible, but the Yankees are doing well right now in the AL East and still a force to be reckoned with without their leader, Derek Jeter, from years past.
Yeah, because, yeah, Derek Jeter was such a leader. We won every season he was there, right?
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't say that.
I'm saying it because I'm sick of hearing that they're doing this without Derek Jeter, like this is something new. Derek Jeter didn't win a lot of times when he was here, so all of a sudden we're going to not win because he's not here? It's nonsense. The Yankees are doing well. Guys are playing, you know, up to the back of that baseball card. I'm surprised that DeShera, I'll be honest with you, because I still hate the fact that he refuses to do something that every hitter should be able to do, which is to hit to go the other way, especially when they're giving you an open side of the field to hit to. Stephen Drew still needs to be released, but, I mean, Alex is doing what I said Alex would do, which he's doing well. The man could always hit. That's what people fail to realize. That man could always hit. He was a supremely gifted had some time off to get healthy. He's healthy. And he will be, I would be willing to bet at the end of the season, his numbers will be almost the same or better than Chase Headley's. The guy everybody's screaming should be is the Yankees third baseman. His numbers will be exactly the same. Batting average might be a little lower. I'd be willing to bet he hits as many home runs and drives in close to as many RBIs as Chase Headley. You know, the Yankees right now are looking good. They got two pitchers who will be coming back soon. In my opinion, American League East, as much as people want to talk about, you know, oh, it's the Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays, the Blue Jays can't pitch. The Orioles pitching is suspect, and the Red Sox pitching is suspect. So this division was wide open at the start of the season. It all came down to who was going to be able to pitch. And with the Yankees' bullpen and the power arms that they can bring in, you know, it's a six-inning game. It really is a six-inning game. So right now everything is good.
Okay. And away from the hitting, which we notably know about, how about that bullpen that has actually been stepping up and been playing awesome for you guys?
Well, we got to get the starting pitchers in to start to go a little bit longer. Well, they're going to burn those guys out. But that bullpen, you know, if you don't have a lead on the Yankees going into the sixth inning, you're not going to win the game. I can guarantee that one. So that bullpen is going to – I think that's the reason Yankees will win the American League East, because of the bullpen.
Right, because they have two notable studs that have been getting it done, and Dallin has been the one that everybody's been pointing their fingers at, saying you got to watch out for this tower that's on the bump, you know, throwing some crazy pitches off of there, and people don't want to see them late, to say the least bit.
Very true. I mean, all anybody wanted to talk about in spring training was, oh, he's not throwing 100 miles an hour. He doesn't have to throw 100 miles an hour to get you out. He also has a breaking pitch. So it was the development of a young pitcher. And, you know, because people are creatures of the moment. Everybody's, oh, he's not throwing 100. He's not going to be any good. How's that working out for everybody? He's doing fine.
Right, right. And I'm going to just get a little personal before I get to the next topic and then get rolling to the big dishes, because I got some heavy stuff. So screw the Yankees, because I can't stand them personally. And I can't believe they're right where they are right now, and they're doing it without their notables, even though A-Rod is trying to step back into his old mold. But, you know, you get notable help from Teixeira, and the pitching staff has actually been the I guess the overlooked situation. They've actually been doing well. They were shutting the Red Sox down at home. Like, it's tough to let alone go into Fenway and deal with these guys. They had them shut off for quite a bit. And for them to storm up to put up eight or plus more runs last night on a nationally televised game on ESPN, I tip my hat to the Yankees to get it done right now, especially while the Red Sox are trying to turn around. And they got some notable bats within that lineup. So, but I'm tipping my hat, but I'm getting nauseous and sick saying and doing it all at the same time. I really cannot stand the New York Yankees. But I told him I had to get him a cup of coffee, start that one off. I got one more baseball dish so I can get away from it, because I got a lot of heavy stuff, like I said, and we do have a caller in queue. I'm going to give you this one topic, because I don't know if they're big on baseball, so I'm going to give this one to you and then get away from it. Now, Chandler, it's the year 2015, right? And I want to say 2006, was it? 2007, when this team was notably in the World Series and they ended up letting one slip. 2006 it was. And that's the Houston Astros. The Houston Astros are off to a good start right now. They're streaking as well, getting it done offensively and defensively. Their pitchers are also stepping up and controlling games as well. What's going on in Minute Maid Park down there in Texas?
Well, what the Astros did, and people call it tanking to get better, but the Astros, and they did, the Astros management for about 4 or 5 years put minor league teams on the field. Those weren't major league teams they were fielding. They wouldn't pay anybody. They had the lowest payroll in baseball, and they weren't, and their scouting and their drafting and their development of those players has been tremendous. I mean, Jose Altuve is a guy that everybody looks at and says, oh, he's short, he must not be able to play. Jose Altuve will get 200 hits every season. He's going to hit you 340, 350. He can play defense. He had a 440-foot home run the other night, by the way. But it's not about the home runs. It's about they have good players, they have good young players, they have good young pitching. They have developed their organization. This is not a fluke, what they're doing. This is not a fluke. For the people that think it is, they're not a fluke. I love what they're doing, and I think that Houston Astros will be in the playoffs this season. They will be. They are a very good team, and if you don't know, you might want to take a look at them. They're young. They're exciting. Yeah, their ballpark has got a couple of it's got some things in it that, you know, are kind of hokey, but you know what? They play well there, and they play well on the road. So I love what the Astros are doing. I don't think it's a fluke. I think they're going to hang in all season.
They have the second best record in baseball, and it really depends on what the Cardinals do in their next game. The Cardinals are 18-6. The Astros are 18-7 at this point. Now, obviously, we've seen teams like the New York Mets get off to a crazy April, and they're skidding. Now, I know it's early. They could probably turn this thing around in their next game or so, but I know people that I associate with, work with, are Mets fans, and they said it's the Mets time right now. They said at least we got through the month of April, and now we're at the month of May, and they're sliding right now. And it's a crazy race right now in the NL East because nobody's basically above 500 other than the Mets. So hopefully the Mets don't lose this. But it's very interesting to see a team like the Astros still along top because they've actually switched divisions, switched leagues also, being in the AL West right now, sitting on top of that as well. So the Astros are doing work knowing that they are top baseball right now, respectively in the AL altogether. We were just talking about the Yankees. They have a better record than the New York Yankees right now, people. Hey, who would ever imagine that? I could care less. I could care less at the beginning of the season, so on and so forth. They're doing better, and the Yankees are playing great baseball right now. They're doing better than the New York Yankees, just to say that, just to get that off my chest.
Well, as far as the Mets go, the Mets have an opportunity to win the National League East. The problem with the Mets is their management still will not make the moves they need to make. They have a shortstop who can't hit, he can't field. They got a second baseman who can hit, not for power, but he can't field. Your second baseman and your shortstop are butchers. They are butchers. And rather than move Daniel Murphy, which they should have done in the offseason, and get a second baseman, it could have gotten, there was some second baseman up to be had. And rather than not go get a shortstop, again, it was short, because their management still doesn't want to spend money. They're still running the Mets as though they are some expansion small market team playing in Moose Jaw, Minnesota, versus a team playing in New York. It's criminal what they're doing. It's criminal because that team has a shot to win, and you will never win with Wilmer Flores and Daniel Murphy as your double play combination.
Hey, watch what you say about where they're playing at Moose Jaw, Minnesota. Why do you got to go there? Why do you just really have to say that? Really?
Well, really? Only seven people live there.
In my Chandler Knight voice, really? Really? Like, you really got to talk about me? Okay. So, I had to get the baseball out of the way. I had to wake him up. As you can see, I got him a cup of Joe. Now, let me get the caller in queue. We got people here, but if you want to let me know that you want to talk, press once I can get you in here. Calling in by way of the state of Georgia, the boy, well, let me not say the boy, the guy, the man from the Bay, Patrick Kearns is in the building. Patrick, welcome to the Rapper. How are you feeling this evening?
Hey, what's going on, gents?
Not too much. You're just hanging out right now. The next topic I have is coming from the Bay Area. I'm going to go to you first. We have another caller behind you, though. But Stephen Curry named the league's MVP. He had a speech today, and it seems like back-to-back, first Kevin Durant last year getting into his emotional speech and speaking on behalf of his mother. And the one thing about the Stephen Curry situation in the speech is I could relate to it wholeheartedly, because I'm not going to lie, I'm not that old, but I've seen the start and finish of Del Curry's career. So he started speaking on behalf of his father and saying how big of a ride it was for him and watching his father go through the ups and downs, so on and so forth, and knowing what Del went through all across the league, coming from the Charlotte Hornets, being passed around as a sharpshooter, and Steph basically carrying on the legacy, got to somewhere where his father has never been on a stage accepting a Most Valuable Player award. Hats off to Stephen Curry to get this job done. I'm going to come to you first, Pat, because you are from the Bay Area of California. Your thoughts on Stephen Curry's season? And I don't know if you heard the speech or not, but it definitely is something else to hear.
No, I didn't hear the speech, but well-deserved. He was definitely my MVP for the season, just because of the way the NBA picks their MVPs. It's usually the best player on the best team, and that's just how it works. It's the unwritten rule, and that's what they go by. So he deserves it. I mean, coming out of Davidson, and seeing the way his game has just progressed, you know, lights out shooter, he was that from day one, but just, you know, developing his handles and his passing game, and it's just very evident that, and this is more telling in basketball probably than any other sport, you can tell the players who work on their games in the offseason because they come with something different every year. And he's definitely done that, so I'm very happy for the young man.
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on this situation, and I know you know about Dell as well, seeing this guy play a ton of games, respectively, all across the NBA. Your thoughts on Steph Curry getting the MVP award, and if you've heard the speech, let me know your thoughts on how he basically acknowledged his father on a lot of the progression that he's gone through as well.
Nah, you know, I don't listen to nonsense like MVP speeches. I don't listen to that. I don't care. You know, congratulations to him. I wouldn't have made him. I wouldn't have voted for him for MVP. You know that. I don't think he, in my opinion, there was somebody who should have gotten MVP. But as Pat said, you know, the rule is what it is. And they were pushing him for MVP from just before the All-Star break on. So I knew he would get it. I didn't think he should. But I knew he would get it, so I'm not surprised that he won.
Okay. And speaking of which, on the player that you would probably speak, as a matter of fact, I'll get to the next caller that we have a QL chef around here, and then I'll get into that because that is a heavy conversation in the midst of this, too. Calling in by way of the state of Arizona, you guys know him as Nacho, a.k.a. Mr. Silva. Welcome to the wrap-up. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, yeah, what's going on? I'm feeling great. I'm feeling good. A beautiful day. We had some clouds out here in Arizona, so the sun wasn't out, so it's beautiful weather today. I'm feeling awesome.
Well, you could take this heat. It was 81 degrees out here already. I do not want to see the summer. I do not. Bring the fall back. Bring the fall back. I don't want to see the heat. Okay, your thoughts on Steph Curry, him winning the MVP, and I'll get into in-depth about the situation on the people behind Steph Curry in his voting, and I know that's something that Chandler wanted to touch on, too. Your thoughts on Steph bringing it back to the Bay?
And, you know, Pat hit it on the head, the unwritten rule is the best player on the best team, and if we're going by that criteria, then, yes, that's Stephen Curry. But my thing is MVP is most valuable player, so I don't agree with him becoming the MVP. I think it should have been a co-MVP with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Without either of those players, both of those teams missed the playoffs completely. I know Thunder missed the playoffs, but they wouldn't have been anywhere near close to the contention or fighting for a playoff spot without Russell Westbrook. They might be fighting the bottom of the West right now without Russell Westbrook at all this year. So I definitely would have to give Westbrook, even though I know the knock on him is he didn't play a full season, and that is a big knock. But just the way I see it as most valuable player. So those two guys were the most valuable players to their teams among any other players on any other teams, in my opinion. I would have done a co-MVP this year between Harden and Westbrook, just the way they played, the numbers they put up, the triple-doubles by Westbrook and Harden just showing up every night in and night out and the 40-point games and 35-point games. So I definitely would have given it to those two, but since the unwritten rule and the criteria is best player on best team, you know, I can't argue with who they picked. The speech I didn't listen to, I did catch it. It was on, but I didn't have the volume on. I really could care less what his speech was. I figured it was going to be, you know, heartfelt and very respectable, and most doubtably he would give respect to his father. So I didn't expect anything less than that. So.
Okay, now, so this is where I want to go with this one, because it's the players that are behind Steph Curry in his MVP voting. In second place was James Harden, notably the arguable discussion between those two sitting atop the MVP voting, because the way the Clippers, the way the Warriors played and the way that the Rockets have played all season long, you had to notably throw these two in a discussion. Now, third place is LeBron James. Now, I understand he is the face of the NBA right now. And he ended up with 5 first-place votes, and then Russell Westbrook came in fourth. Now, I understand the situation where Russ and the Thunder didn't even place in the top 8 in the Western Conference, but notably how the rule goes and how Chandler and Nacho have all hit on it, on the best team, best player on each respective team gets there. I want to talk about the players that are at least behind Steph Curry and what they did in this crazy 2014-2015 season that went noticed or unnoticed. And respectively, I'm going to say this here on Sports City. Who's doing the doggone voting? Who is doing the doggone voting? Now, I understand, I respect Steph Curry winning the MVP. He won by a landslide. And it was like, okay, Harden was the closest thing to him, and Harden was nowhere near 50 votes near this guy. Like it was like clean, sweet Steph Curry at the end of the day. And I'm not taking anything away from Curry. Curry played ball this season. But come on. I want to know what's going on. Is it literally because he's on the best team and the Warriors are doing a ton of work? Because let's be honest, Harden had to carry that load without Dwight Howard for quite some time and made the players around him better. LeBron James is himself, I can't lie. He fell into a situation back in Cleveland. They put some pieces around him, and Cleveland started to excel. I can't take things away from LeBron, but also looking at the notable players around him like Russell Westbrook as well. These guys had to do a lot more work with what they had around them at the given time. But I want to see how you guys feel about it before I continue to put my full twist on it. Nacho, I'll come right back to you, then I'll go to Pat. Your thoughts on the players that were behind Steph Curry in the voting?
Well, you know, I already broke down who I felt should have won in MVP. I thought it should have been a co-MVP between Harden and Westbrook. I could understand if you just gave it to Harden, all alone by himself. That makes total sense to me. Again, I don't agree with the landslide. It doesn't make any sense to give someone a landslide victory when for not even 1 week in this entire season was any one particular player the front runner or the absolute favorite to win MVP. Every week it was another player that was ahead of another player. It was the same three names being put in there, and it never really stayed at one consistently. So I don't see how you could say he just landslide won MVP. That doesn't make sense. If Stephen Curry all year long was the talk of the town, week in and week out, game in and game out, nobody else really played up to that level. Nobody else really, accelerated their team play or anything else like that. I can understand. But the fact that you had Harden, you had Westbrook, and to some extent you did kind of have LeBron, I don't know about, I can understand why he's beating out Westbrook, but the landslide, again, I don't understand it. There was no one that, like I said, especially Steph Curry, he wasn't the talk of the town week in and week out. So I definitely don't understand it. I think, like you said, who's doing the voting? I don't know if it was just because his team was at the top the whole year. Well, then why didn't you give Kyle Korver, why isn't Kyle Korver second? That's my thing. If you're just doing it on the best team and the best player on the best team, then number one should have been Steph Curry and number two should have been Kyle Korver because Atlanta is the second best team in the NBA in retrospect. So I just I don't understand the voting then at that point. So I don't get it. I understand where you're coming from, though, saying that it should about the best player on the best team and the unwritten rule. We all get that, but it just doesn't make any sense for a landslide when none of these guys really dominated the entire year for more than 50 votes away. That's ridiculous. That's just ridiculous.
Pat, your thoughts on some of the players like James Harden, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, your thoughts on the season that these guys had and the way that the voters went totally for Steph. And I mean, there were some voters that gave these guys a consideration on a respectable season that they've had. But your thoughts on these guys that came from second through fourth place within this voting?
They had very good seasons, but you know, I've been following basketball since I was a child, and the voting for the NBA MVP award has never changed. It's extremely consistent. The criteria is consistent. And I was trying to think, while Nacho was talking, I was trying to think, who's the last player in the NBA that was on a team that didn't make the playoffs that won the MVP? I can't remember. I know there's got to be at least one. I just don't know who it is. In regards to Harden and LeBron, LeBron's always going to be in the top three, period, because he's a stat sheet stuffer. So his stats are always going to have him in the hunt. He just has the ability to just put ungodly numbers up. He's just that good. I wouldn't even, you know, the argument for Harden, I wouldn't even debate that. I think he would, if they would have named him MVP, well-deserved, just as Curry is. But at the end of the day, it's all about the most dynamic player on the most dynamic team. I think the real argument was the year that Shaq didn't win it and Steve Nash won it. It was like a lot of people still argue and debate that one. I think they were talking about that the other night on TNT. That was like, in recent memory for me, that was like the only MVP voting that was highly disputed. I guess if you're a Harden fan, if you're a hardcore basketball fan, and you look at what James Harden had to do with Houston, with you know, the injury to their center and whatnot, is he deserving? Sure he is, no doubt. But hell, I don't know who votes on it. I was assuming it's the sports writers, but I don't really know. I know the players don't, and they're really moving that. They've put that in the fast track for players to have a say so in who the MVP of the league is. Kyle Korver is a role player. So it's very difficult for a role player to get an MVP award, to even get consideration, even if you're on a team that is one or, you know, record wise, one of the two or three best in the league. I mean, Curry is an extremely dynamic player, as is Harden, as is LeBron. So, yeah, I would definitely make an argument for Harden. Anybody else after that? They're not even part of the conversation. Westbrook, sorry, by default, you're on a team that didn't make the playoffs. You're not going to win it. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter. That's just the way they vote. That's the reality of it, and that's how I see it.
Okay, Chandler, your case for the guy that you were pulling for to get the MVP, and I know we've had tons of conversations on at least the guys that were in this conversation, especially about the way Russ was coming off, and you actually waking me up to the comparison on how he is Mike-like. I'm not going to say he is a Michael Jordan, but he did things for the team similar to what Michael Jordan was doing for the Bulls. Give or take your discussion on about the voting, the players behind Steph Curry, you know, thoughts of that nature.
Well, the voting is done by idiots. It's done by sports writers and driven by whatever ESPN, whatever player ESPN in the league are pushing to be the favorite guy. Whatever guy's getting the most commercials and being talked about the most, that's the guy who's going to get the MVP. There is no way that anybody's going to tell me that Russell Westbrook shouldn't have got MVP for what he did. No way. And Pat, the last guy to get one from a losing team was Kareem, 75-76. The only other guy before him you could even think about to say the team wasn't really that good was Bob Pettit, and that was a 55-56 with the Hawks. But Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won an MVP on a team that did not make the playoffs. So it has happened. Not for, almost 40 years now. Almost 40 years. Because people assume that if you're the best player on the best team, you must be the MVP. That's not how it works. You take Steph Curry off of the Warriors, do they still make the playoffs? Yes. Take James Harden off of the Rockets, and they had Dwight Howard with the team that they had with him without Dwight Howard. Does that team make the playoffs? Not even close. You take Russell Westbrook off of the Thunder. Do they even sniff 30 wins? No. Not with that team he had this year, no. That team doesn't sniff 30 wins. Now, you put Steph Curry on the Thunder with the team that Russell Westbrook had. Does that team get close to the playoffs? No, they do not. No, they do not. You put Harden on it, do they get close to the playoffs? Yes. Do they make it? Probably not. But they get close. That's my criteria. That's how I look at a team, a player, and say, is he the most valuable? If I take him off of that team and put one of those other guys that you're talking about on that team, will they do as well as he did? They can't. Or can his team win without him? The Golden State Warriors can win without Stephen Curry. We saw that in game one against the Grizzlies. We saw it. The Grizzlies took him and Klay Thompson totally out of the game. How badly did the Grizzlies lose?
Because more than 15.
Thank you. And by that, oh, by the way, by the criteria, I'm using Mike Conley should have got a couple of votes because the difference Mike Conley makes on that team is ridiculous. Okay? But it is what it is now. Now it's about popularity. It's really not even about stats. It's just about popularity. If you are liked and you are good and there's an agenda to get your name out there, then you will get votes for MVP and you'll probably win MVP. Right now, there's some LeBron fatigue, so they're trying to find other people they can push as the faces of the league. LeBron James shouldn't have been fifth in the voting, by the way. He shouldn't have been third. No way he should have been third. Tell me why he deserved to be third. The Cleveland Cavaliers, for most of the season, were you know, in many ways an afterthought. In some ways, they were a joke. When you got a player making decisions on who gets traded and who stays on the team, how is that not a joke? Now, if you want to say LeBron James should get coach of the year or GM of the year, I'll give you that. Shouldn't get MVP. Shouldn't have even been in the voting. But this is, again, as Pat said, this is what the NBA has turned into, is if you're the best player on the best team, not the best player in the league, mind you, but the best player on the best team. And those two things aren't always the same. Allen Iverson was an MVP because without him, the Philadelphia 76ers would have been horrible. He was the best player in the league on the team that, you know, record-wise was the best, but let's be honest, those teams weren't great. Those teams were not good at all. Strictly based on his brilliance, they won. Now, you can't say that about Steph Curry. You can't. So how was he the MVP? Because all season long since the preseason, we've heard Steph Curry, Steph Curry, Steph Curry, Steph Curry, Steph Curry, Steph Curry. And so Steph Curry got the MVP. Period, end of story. And it has nothing to do with his play on the court. Really doesn't. This was driven from the preseason with all the publicity he got. And I've always said the NBA decides who's going to get MVP before the season even starts. And you can tell that by how they start marketing guys. Before the season even started, Steph Curry had 17 commercials. I knew right then and there he was going to get the MVP because that was the marketing plan. He is now the face of the league. So guess what? He gets the spoils to go along with that.
Okay, y'all. Pat, is there anything that you would like to rebut or question or say anything toward before we get away from it? Did we lose Pat?
Nah, I agree with everything you said. I agree.
Okay. it's interesting. I don't know how much we want to get out of James Jones, the receiver for the Raiders, but he's going to get cut due to the fact that they have Crabtree and Amari Cooper. I think that's going to be big because Detroit, hello, go get him, go get him, go get him. He could be a possibility. Him, Golden, and Calvin will be good. But just knowing that they got Crabtree, an injury-prone receiver, even though he's good, I'm not taking anything away from Crabtree, you get a young guy in Cooper, and we don't know what Cooper's going to look like, even though I'm highly impressed, and I love what Cooper brings to a football field. But I thought that would be a good trio of having James Jones being the elder out of the three, Crabtree, if he's available to give them all 16 games throughout the season, and Cooper being the young stud out of these three, I thought that was very questionable for at least management from the Raiders to get rid of James Jones. If you want to talk about this, we can go into it. Chandler, I'll come to you first. I'm going to leave Pat for last, as he is the Raider guy here today.
Well, it makes sense to me because there's a receiver who I can't remember, and Pat will probably mention him, who I think when we were talking drafts and all that, and we were thinking that this kid would kind of get lost in the shuffle, even though he was really good last year, but again, on a bad Raider team, and he didn't get enough publicity. He's going to be a good young receiver, and I can't remember his name. So yeah, I understand it. The Raiders have some talent at the receiver position. They have some talent. And Michael Crabtree, whether he's injured or not, can fill that veteran presence. I don't think I think they have better receivers than James Jones. Let me just put it like that. I don't think that them cutting him hurts them in the least. I don't think it hurts them in the least.
No, I'm not saying that it hurts them. I'm thinking that they have more firepower with Jones, Crabtree, and Cooper together. That's what I was saying. I didn't say that it hurts them, but I'm just saying that I would rather have more weapons for a guy like Carr at the end of the day while the running game slowly picks up its production along the way. That's how I'm actually trying to phrase that.
But they have firepower. That's what I'm saying. I cannot remember to save my life, and Pat will mention his name. That kid right there, trust me, they have firepower to receive position. James Jones was extra, if I can put it. He was extra.
Okay, and possibly the receiver you may be talking about is Streeter or the guy Tompkins that they picked up from the Patriots?
No, it's not Streeter, I don't think. Pat knows what I'm talking about. He'll mention his name.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go to Nacho next because Nacho is a former – I don't want to say he was in love with him, but he's a Packer guy and actually knows a good bit about Jones. Your thoughts on the Raiders getting ready to release him, and in spite of this situation with the names that they do have around in Oakland with Crabtree, Cooper, throwing out another name like Streeter, Tompkins is also trying to build up his production and getting Cooper in the mix of this. Do you think that was a good move, a bad move, or indifferent?
It's kind of indifferent. I mean, the moment the Packers got a couple wide receivers in the draft, they kind of just let James Jones go. He's kind of just that regular guy. You kind of can put him anywhere, and he'll play well for a little bit. So I think it's really indifferent. I think they have enough wide receiver help, especially with Cooper coming in, Streeter, Tompkins. They're going to be fine. I think it's really indifferent either way. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's just a casualty of the draft.
Okay, and last but not least, Pat, this is your team, so I wanted you to speak in depth on it if you can. If not, then I can get moving as quickly as possible to the matches that we have tonight. One of them already underway, and the Bulls actually got off to an early start up against the Cavaliers, but I don't want to spill too much into that situation. But, Pat, your thoughts on Jones only being there for one season, and they didn't really get much done with him, and I don't want to put this on his shoulders because it's not on James Jones' shoulders on how less productive the Raiders were this season. They're already getting rid of him for an injury-prone receiver and a young stud in Cooper that they probably could have soaked up more of what the offense was going to provide, and also their postseason, or also his postseason experience as well. Your thoughts?
James Jones is the product of the collective bargaining agreement. You don't hold on to veteran players who cost you money when you got young players who are not. And I think a huge misconception, especially with the Raiders, is offensive coordination was complete trash last year. Greg Olsen ran probably the most predictable offensive scheme you could run. We didn't surprise anybody. They knew what we were going to do. We couldn't run the ball. So teams could basically just play off of us. Now, when you look at what the Raiders have in Andre Holmes, who's a straight athlete, he's just out there freestyling. He needs to be developed, run better routes. Bryce Butler was the most productive in terms of scoring of all the wide receivers we had. He scored 5 touchdowns. He barely even got a chance to see the field. You got Rod Streeter, who was injured. Now, all those guys I've just mentioned, they have no more than 4 years in the league. You add Crabtree, you add Cooper, and they just signed Harper, who played with Carr at Fresno State, as an undrafted free agent. So you're looking at a wide receiver core as it stands right now with 4 years of experience or less. All they have to do is be coached up. Could you have hung on to James Jones? Probably. However, that means you're sacrificing one of the younger players who could develop into something that you might not see had you gotten rid of. So he's a cap casualty, which there are many of in the NFL, and that's just the way it goes now. I like the fact that McKenzie got rid of him early, so it gives him plenty of time to go latch on to another team and, you know, be the guy that he still thinks that he can be. Don't be surprised if he ends up back in Green Bay just as a sentimental favorite. Not that they really need him, because they got Cobb, and then they got Jordy Nelson, and then they got another young kid. So with
they just picked up Ty Montgomery out of Stanford, the big receiver with a ton of speed.
So what you have is you got all these teams now have very young wide receivers. Everybody does. I mean, you know, how many wide receivers can we name that's in the league right now that are James Jones's age? 31. You got Andre Johnson
Indianapolis.
With the Colts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, other than that, who else is notable at that age? Not a whole lot. So it's not like they made a move that's completely detrimental to the team. In one season, the Raiders have gone from one of the oldest teams to one of the youngest in one season. I think our oldest players are Justin Tuff, Sebastian Janikowski, and John Kondo, the long snapper. They're all over 30. Other than that, I don't think we got very many players that are over 27 at the most. So there is a method to the madness here. That's all I got.
Okay. Anybody want to add anything else to the James Jones situation, or should we keep moving? Okay, that helps me out.
I was just going to say that, you know, he made a very good point, because I believe at one point the Raiders were the oldest team, and now they average 27. So they're still old, but they're not as old as they used to be, but they're still old. So don't think they're getting too young yet.
The game that's already underway is the Chicago Bulls visiting the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Bulls got off to a tremendous start. At one point, we're leading by 15 in this game. The Cavs have cut this lead to 6 with 6 minutes left in the second quarter. The Bulls are up 39-33. I just want to get you guys' thoughts on this situation. One, the Cavs are playing without J.R. Smith due to the fact of that the backhand situation that Jay Crowder that happened in the game 4 situation up against the Celtics. He is out, and also Kevin Love is out for the full duration of the remainder of the postseason with a separated or dislocated shoulder. Excuse me. Your guys' thoughts on this situation with a big and a notable guard out for game one up against a motivated Chicago Bulls team that's trying to get things started on the road. I'll start with you first, Pat.
All right. When we talk about the Cavs, we got to talk about LeBron James. And I find it kind of ironic that LeBron is in the situation that he has avoided his entire career, and that is being the man. He bolted from Cleveland because he was the man, and as close as they were, he couldn't stick it out, which I felt he should have stayed, because you got to make your bones in the NBA. You just don't get over the hump that quickly. You got to work your way through. If you go back in history and you look at the Isaiah Thomases and you look at players like that, that were the Michael Jordans. What, Michael Jordan played 7-8 years before they made a final? And you got to do that work. And I think what scared him away from Cleveland was the fact that, you know, basketball is notorious for having their superstars, meaning that you're the reason they win and you're the reason they lose. Whether you like it or not, if you're designated as a superstar, you're expected to carry your team, a la Chris Paul against San Antonio. Now, with Kevin Love being gone, with Richardson being gone, he's back in the same position he's avoided. One of the reasons he loved going to Miami was because you had Chris Bosh, and then you had Dwayne Wade. So even though he's an extremely prolific player, if they didn't win or do what it was they were supposed to do, it was not going to be all his fault. Now he's right back to square one. He's got to do what Chris Paul did. He has to will his team past this Bulls team. And the Bulls are extremely motivated for this series because they know that Cleveland is not at full strength. And they're going to do everything in their power to take advantage of that. And James has got to accept this superstar face of the league responsibility. He's got to face it. You have to carry this team, whether you like it or not. Once we elevate you to superstar status, that is the requirement for being a superstar. You have to carry the team no matter what happens, no matter if you get injured or not. As long as you can be out there and play, you got to carry. And that's what he's going to have to do. So he's right back in the catbird seat once again. Can he do it? I think he can, if he just puts his mind to it and embraces the role. That's what we're going to see if he can do it. That's we're going to see if that actually comes to fruition or not. And if it doesn't, he's going to be faced with the same criticism. Because the only reason I'm not a big LeBron fan, because he's not clutch moments, he fades. I'm sorry, he just does. And that's no fault of his. He's just not that type of player. Now, up until that point, he'll do everything under the sun. But when it comes to taking that last shot, when it comes to hitting those crucial free throws, he always falls short. And I think it's more of a mental thing than it is a physical thing. So that's where I stand on that.
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on this matchup, which is probably the epic matchup in the Eastern Conference right now. Knowing that Derrick Rose and LeBron have a dislike toward one another on the floor, I know they respect each other off the floor, but your thoughts on how this thing could go down, the Bulls have an early lead, while J.R. Smith, a guy that you love so much, and Kevin Love, another player that you love so much, are out at least for game one, and Love is out for the remainder of the playoffs. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I said months ago that people that were depending on J.R. Smith would be let down when the playoffs came, and they were. I told you that Iman Shumpert would disappear once the playoffs came, and he has. And in many ways, it's what Pat said. You know, LeBron James, and you know, I used to defend him, Ty, until I heard the things he said when he left Miami. Things like, well, if we had won, I would have stayed. So you weren't willing to put in the work. See, I could understand why he left Cleveland the first time. I understood it. The team was terrible. He wanted to win. I get it. But then you left Miami when you had weapons and because you didn't want to work hard. So you go to Cleveland and you make them trade away Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love so your life can be easy. People have always compared him to Magic. He's not Magic. Because you know what? Magic played center in Game 7 in the finals. Magic would play whatever position was needed. Magic would do whatever was needed for the team to win. That's not LeBron James. LeBron James wants everybody else around him so that his life can be easy.
Mm-hmm.
He wants it to be easy. He wants a big three, not because, you know, he wants it so it'll be easy, so he doesn't have to work hard. That's the only way to say it. And Patrick, it's not a physical thing. It's a mental thing. You know, the fact of the matter is that he's a more talented Joe Johnson. He's a guy that don't really want the spotlight but gets the spotlight thrust on him because he is so supremely physically gifted, because he does have a high basketball IQ, because he can do things on that court that very few people can. But he's weak. He's weak. And I don't think the Cavaliers are going to win with him there. I said that. I told you they get out of the second round. I still say that. The Bulls are a complete team. The Bulls are a team full of mentally tough guys. They're a team full of mentally tough guys. So, no, I think the Bulls will take this series, and I think that people will make the excuse, well, he didn't have Kevin Love and he didn't have this guy. To be honest, with the team that he has around him, he should not need Kevin Love or J.R. Smith to beat the Bulls. He shouldn't need it. It should be enough for him and Kyrie Irving. That should be enough. And the fact that it won't be is an indictment of LeBron James.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on the situation from what you heard from both Pat and Chandler, and anything that you'd like to add to this dish? While both of these teams take off in game one, the Bulls actually having an interesting game with the Cleveland Cavaliers without some of their notables that are part of this roster.
You know, I mean, are we still questioning a two-time champion whether or not he can play? I don't know if in the clutch time he makes decisions. Whether or not he takes a shot or not, I don't know if that makes him less clutch or not. He makes a decision to pass the ball instead of shoot it to a wide-open player. I mean, in all actuality, you covered by two or a wide-open player. What's the higher percentage shot? I don't get it. I don't get the knock on the guy. Sometimes he makes the decision to pass the ball when we saw Jordan take it, when we see Kobe take it. I understand those guys take the shot because you know, they're more confident. I don't know why they take the shot and he passes it, but he makes a sound decision. I don't question most of his decisions in the clutch. When he misses the shot and you know, it doesn't go in, well, he shouldn't have taken the shot. When he passes it to a wide-open player who misses a shot, well, he should have taken the shot. I don't understand it. You're never going to have the way you want it with LeBron because he's always going to do what I feel is the smarter play in some instances. I may not be the popular play. It may not be the gutsier play or the more clutch, I guess, play, if that makes any sense, to pass the ball with 2 seconds left or 3 seconds left to a wide-open player. I guess that's not, you know, I guess that's frowned upon, but I don't understand it. I do get an earlier in his career, he was afraid. He shied away from big situations. He just didn't have anyone to pass it to those early years in Cleveland. And then when he went to Miami, we saw what happened. 4 straight finals in 2 and two titles. So I do understand. I do get it. Some of the criticism, I just don't understand why he has to take the last shot or he has to be the final say. I mean, isn't him passing the ball to an open player, him giving the final say, having trust in his players, making them even better? In my opinion, I think that is enough. But as it pertains to the game and it goes to the Bulls versus the Cavaliers, I don't think they can overcome the absence of Kevin Love. I know there's a talk about how he's weak or whatever. I do think that his play in the last series really elevated prior to the regular season. So compared to the regular season, I should say. So I definitely think that they're going to miss him. I don't think they win the series without him. And then, you know, to reiterate the Chandler's sentiments, you all thought J.R. Smith was looking good, but he would be missing time in the playoffs. I was behind him on that. I totally agree with him and his assessment on J.R. Smith. He'll miss more games most likely, and it'll be at the detriment of the Cavaliers. So I definitely see the Bulls winning the series. They have more resolve. They have more mental strength. And I actually see them winning this series even if Derrick Rose goes down. I think if Derrick Rose deals with an injury, this team is mentally strong enough, and I think they have enough confidence in this team that they can still take Cleveland without Derrick Rose.
But Nacho, that's my point. That's my point about LeBron is you can't put him in the Magic class. You can't put him in the class of the all-time greats because he should be able – passing, whether it's rebounding, whatever it is, to dominate this series and will his team to win against the Bulls with the cast that he currently has. And he's not built for that. That's where I say he's weak. I don't care about who takes the last shot. I could care less about that because that's a 50-50 thing, no matter who takes the shot. It's either going to go in or it's not. And more people miss last-second shots than they make. We only hear about the ones that are made. My problem with him now is the fact that he is mentally weak because this team that he has around him, they should beat the Bulls. If he is an all-time great, they should beat him. Period, end of story. This should be a series that he takes by the throat and says, we are not losing. Instead, he's going to look at everybody else and say, how come you guys didn't help me win? If you are an all-time great, you tell the other guys, we got this. Don't worry about it. I'm going to take us to the promised land. You know, like Dominique Wilkins going against Larry Bird shot for shot. When Dominique Wilkins at that point in his career was a terrible jump shooter. And the Boston Celtics said, we're going to make you take jump shots. He went down and said, okay, I'm going to make the jump shots. I'm going to make them anyway. That type of all-time great. That's not what LeBron is. He's a two-time champion because he had two mentally tough all-stars playing with him in Miami. Two guys that he could lean on and say, okay, you guys, man, you guys help me win. No, it's not about help me win. It's about get on my back. I got this. That's not who he is.
Can I add to what Chandler is saying? And Nacho, here's the crux of it, okay, when – because, see, me and Chandler are talking about the same thing in regards to in the NBA, here's another unwritten rule. This is another unwritten rule. When they elevate you to superstar status, it's your responsibility to make sure your team wins a championship. Okay? Chandler brought up Magic when he played center. Still, to this day, of all the great things, exceptional, that I've seen in professional sports, I've never seen anything like that. Because here's the caveat to what Magic did. He was a rookie. And they put him at center against not one seven-footer, two seven-footers, Caldwell Jones and Daryl Dawkins. He scored 42 points, and got 16 rebounds. Playing a position that he had not played the entire season. Now, you go from Magic
You go to Bird. You go to Olajuwon. You go to Isaiah, Dr. J. What do they all have in common? When it came time to seize the moment, they took it. They let nothing get in the way. And basketball is unique in that regard when you talk about superstars, because they are expected to be the difference, not contribute, not stuff the stat sheet. What we saw Chris Paul do, and unfortunately, it was in the first round, but that's how it goes. We don't care about you being hurt. If you're out there and you can run, remember Jordan when they played Utah and he had the fever. I was like, when that game started, I was like, oh my God, this is a setup. And I love Jordan. I was not a Bulls fan. I was not a Jordan fan, but I respected Jordan because he was just out of this world. And when they, I think that was like a game six, and they were like, oh, Jordan's got the flu. He's got a 102-degree fever. I was like, oh, my God, he's going to go off. And what did he do? He went off. They couldn't even stop the dude. And that's how greatness is determined in the NBA. Not football, not baseball, not ping pong, tennis, any of that. That's how it's defined in the NBA. And that's how it works. So even though at the end of the day, LeBron is probably going to hold damn near every offensive record known to mankind in basketball. But to a basketball purist, he's going to be looked at as a guy who was taking the last shot when the game was on. He couldn't hit the ocean with basketball. Now, he can change all that. All it takes is this year, and all that changes. All it takes is them winning on his back, and all that is laid to rest. But until he does it, to a basketball purist, yeah, he's going to be suspect, because you want your best player making the best plays when it counts the most, whether that be throwing the dish to a wide-open person. More times than not, you want it to be in that player's hands, making that play. So I understand what you're saying, and just like you're a boxing purist, I'm a basketball purist. That's how they're judged. I mean, that's just the way that it is. It's always been that way. It's going to always be that way. It's never changed. It's never changed. I'm done.
Okay, we are at the tail end of the show. I did get an extension from upstairs on it, but I do want to see you guys' twist on the game that follows this Bulls-Cavaliers game, which is the biggest game, I think, in the playoffs at this moment, with the Clippers visiting the Rockets. Game-time decision on Chris Paul and the hamstring injury, but he did play Superman in winning the game up against the Spurs, going to the hoop up against Green and Tim Duncan. This is a pretty big situation. I want you guys' thoughts and opinions, plus promos and closeouts before we get away from this kitchen. Pat, I'll come to you first. You being a California guy, your thoughts on the Clippers knocking off the defending champs going into Houston and trying to do the same to the Rockets as well?
Another, not even an unwritten rule. In basketball, you got to have a bench. And as much as I like what the Clippers are doing, I really don't like the fact that other than Jamal Crawford coming off the bench, River's son has kind of, you know, the smoke is cleared. So now he's got to show that he can do that on a consistent basis. That's yet to be seen. I just don't like their chances with six, maybe seven players. That's not enough.
If even if, and I don't even think they're going to get past the Rockets, I'm sorry, the Warriors are just young, versatile, firepower. They're getting better defensively. I just, and if that team can get through Houston and then get through the Warriors, oh, they're my odds-on favorites to win the title. However, I just, with what they're working with right now, they, in order to win an NBA title, man, you got to go at least eight deep. At least eight. They're right now, they're going six deep. And at some point, this is going to wear on Chris Paul. This is going to wear on Blake Griffin. This is going to wear on Jamal, the young man. I forget his name, just that quick.
Jamal Crawford.
Jamal Crawford. Right, because they're going to have to play him more minutes now. They're not going to have the luxury of him being able to do like he's been doing, just come in, ignite, and then, you know, just give Chris Paul a breather. He's got to play a lot. He's going to have to play at least 10, 15 more minutes a game. Not saying he can't do it, but it takes away from the fact that that's 10, 15 more minutes less Chris Paul can play until he gets that hamstring to where it needs to be. Because if you notice during the game, he started shooting a lot of jump shots because he didn't have the burst to go to the hoop. He saved his best for last. Notice the only time once he pulled that hammy, the only time he drove to the hoop was on that last shot because he was like, what the hell? This is it. So let me just make or break right here. And great show, gentlemen. I'm sorry that we didn't get into the fight because I wanted to talk about that, but I guess that's on the back burner simmering, and we'll get to that next time. And I'm out.
So I'll let you speak on behalf of the fight. Your thoughts on it. I mean, we discussed it yesterday, and I got Chandler and Nacho's view on it. So your thoughts on the fight, and so you must have watched it, yes or no?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I got an online service where I can get sports around the world for free. So I didn't catch it. I think the site was getting flooded, so the streaming was bad. I think I caught it from like the seventh round on. And it went pretty much like I thought it would go. I mean, if you've seen one Mayweather fight, you've seen them all. Nothing changes. He has a definite style. He sticks to it. Probably the greatest defensive fighter of all time. Or should I say defensive boxer. So I wasn't surprised. I kind of figured it would go that way where he would just outpoint him and make it very difficult for Pacquiao to hit him. And that's exactly what he did. It was no surprise to me. It was really much ado about nothing. You know, Nacho's a boxing purist, so I'm sure he can, you know, tell us a lot more in terms of the sweet science of it all and all that beautiful stuff. But like I said the last time I was on the show, to a casual observer, they were probably bored as all get out because it wasn't a whole lot going on. It really wasn't.
Well, if you want, I have the full fight on my wall. It's a tag with my name. It's Chandler's Knight's name. So it's on Chandler's wall and my wall, the full fight. You can see it from round 1 to round 12.
No.
And enjoy yourself. And from round 1 to round 6, it was interesting fight. It was an interesting fight. Manny was winning some rounds and Floyd won some rounds. From round 7 on, it was a shutout.
Yeah, I'm good. Like I said, if you've seen one Mayweather fight, you've seen them all. You've seen them all. Nothing changes.
It's okay. No, you haven't seen them all. Like you have to see what happened in this fight. To see a brawler get neutralized in the middle of a ring, I said that's insane.
See, you're a boxing purist.
I understand that, but you have to think about this. A guy that stays busy, listen, a lot of people are like, okay, well, Mayweather this, Mayweather that. why wasn't Manny coming forward like he normally does? And the crazy thing is even I'm not even gonna play the game of well he's playing that game while his shoulder. If his shoulder's hurting, then that's another risky thing. But if his shoulder wasn't hurting, why wasn't he coming forward? I'm not gonna do that. I'm not picking on Manny because
I'm not buying the shoulder thing, man. He was throwing punches too good for his shoulder to be hurt. They didn't allow him to get the shot. They didn't even allow him to get the shot, the inflammatory shot. So if that's how you fight with a bad shoulder, please. I'm not even trying to hear that. He can't touch me.
Okay, fair enough. I don't want to rekindle old flames. We got people that'll get touchy. We'll be here for another full hour, and it could be a possibility, but I'm trying to chill. I'm trying to chill. Ignacio. Okay, how about you, Ignacio? Your thoughts on this game tonight, the round two situation? Well, game one of the round two of the doubleheader tonight with the Clippers visiting the Rockets. Your thoughts on how this game could go? We have an interesting matchup in the paint with DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard. I think that's probably the matchup to see because both of them can't really shoot free throws. Both of these guys can get you 20-20 if they really have their heads in the game and are not in foul trouble. The Blake Griffin situation, if he could actually play some monster hero ball. The situation, if Chris Paul is going to be a game-time decision or not. Your thoughts on this epic matchup with the Clippers and the Rockets?
You know, there you go, being an OKC fan and stealing my thunder. My point was going to be DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard. I think this whole series with all the big names and the big players and the Griffins and the Pauls, you know, and the Hardens and anyone else you want to think of, I think this matchup and this series and everything comes down to the two big men and DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard, and not only how they play against each other, but at the end of the game, because I feel that this series might be one of the closest series to date in points. It might be high scoring, but I think it'll be really close. And it'll come down to who can make free throws late and if these guys can get around those free throws and actually make and ones. If they can do that late in the game where they're getting 2 points even though they're getting fouled, I think that can be something that can sway their team into victory. So I do believe it's going to come down to Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan in most of these games, and I just think Dwight Howard's going to come out the victor in a lot of these situations, whether it be rebounding the ball or taking it to the rack or making free throws. I believe the percentages are around 40% for DeAndre Jordan and about 52-53% for Dwight Howard. So I think I'm going to give the edge just to Dwight Howard, and I'm going to give the edge to the Rockets tonight and in the series. I do feel the Rockets can get this done with Dwight Howard playing at a top-notch level. Like you said, he can give you 20-20 any night, and I think he can give you some good, decent blocking as well. So that's going to be a matchup that I think everyone should be looking out for. I think everyone else kind of, I don't want to say washes, but kind of even can cancel each other out or make it evenly matched. So I think that's the match that you have to look forward to in this series. At Nacho in the Box on Twitter, thank you for letting me come on, saying everything I want to say. Boxing is not dead Saturday. Canelo Saul Alvarez, the Mexican Pride, going up against James Kirkland. It's going to be a battle. It's going to be a war. It's going to be a fight, and it's on HBO. And then a couple weeks after that, we got the Knockout King right now, the Knockout Artist Triple G coming up, and that's also on HBO. So this is going to be an amazing few weeks coming up for boxing. It's not dead. Check it out. You don't got to pay $100, Pat, so you can watch it, you know, regularly in HD, and you'll love it. I know you will. So this is going to be two wars coming up that we're going to be excited to do, and the food fight's going to be excited to go after those fights.
That's for sure. I'm trying to tell them. Okay, last but not least, Mr. Knight, your thoughts on this matchup tonight? Rockets and Clippers, and also a plug and close out as we get ready to close the doors on the wrap-up.
Well, I find it interesting that all you Mayweather apologists have to start talking about, well, if you knew about boxing, you'd understand how magical that was, when everyone tells you that the casual fan found that a snooze fest. But anyway. And Pat wasn't even here yesterday, and he said almost verbatim what I said, and I didn't even see the fight. But anyway, as far as the Rockets and the Clippers go, I think Josh Smith is the X factor in this series. I still think Josh Smith is going to spend a lot of time guarding Blake Griffin, and I think his defense and his ability to fill the stat sheet, to do multiple things, him and Terrence Jones, I think, are the difference. I hate picking the Rockets because I really don't want to have to listen to Sirius going into the Western Conference Finals. I really don't. But I think the Rockets will take this series. I do think it'll be a really good series. I think it'll be closely placed, but I think the Rockets have the Rockets can go 8, 9, 10 deep, whereas, as Pat said, the Clippers really only go 6, maybe 7 at best. And I also find it interesting, Ty, that you don't want to talk about the Wizards and the Hawks. But anyway, you know, whatever. We'll keep talking about the great technical player that Floyd Mayweather is now done with Domestico. Yeah, like that made people wake up. Anyway, always a lot of fun, man, when everybody comes. And, you know, we'll see you guys tomorrow. You know, and maybe we can talk more about the great magical technical fight that had no punches thrown for 7 rounds.
First and foremost, I didn't say anything about the fight. I didn't say it. Listen, if you want to ask Patrick Kearns what he said, he's the one who brought the fight up. I didn't bring the fight up, okay? I just actually gave it some thought. So, you know, as another day went by, I'm like, wow, that really is nuts. That is nuts. Pussy, everybody's not a casual fan like Chandler wants him to be. And if you're listening to Sports City, I don't think you're a casual sport fan. I think you are one of those guys that really digs in the crates and really knows what you're listening to or talking about when we're talking about sports. But I'm just saying, from a Brooklyn point of view, down there in South Carolina. Anyway, like I was saying,
wait,
I think this
would
be.
Hold on.
I don't interrupt nobody. I let people speak. Please don't do that to me. I don't do that to none of y'all. Please respect me. I don't do that to y'all. Don't do that to y'all. Please. Now, the fact of the matter is, I think this is going to be a very good game, very good series. I really think the Clippers have a shot to win the series, but I think Houston takes care of home court tonight. I don't think L.A. goes in there and takes care of business. I think L.A. has their hands full, especially with Chris Paul's situation up in limbo for tonight. If they are smart, I think the best thing is to do is to rest him for game one so they can have a healthy Chris Paul throughout the game, throughout the series. But that's just me, because they said they are considering that. So if Doc is smart, I think they can try and rest Chris Paul and try to run with the rest of the players on that roster. But I think that will be tough. SportsCityShows.com, that is the website. I did have somebody I want to speak before I do the closeout. Pat, I think that was you.
No, I missed the end of what Chandler said. I just want him to briefly reiterate.
All I said was that I didn't watch the fight.
Oh, okay.
And all I did, my opinion on the fight, was I said exactly what you said, because exactly what you said is what I heard from everyone who watched it. And it was a snooze fest. And they aren't the boxing purists. See, Ty and the Mayweather apologists, they keep wanting to go to, well, if you knew about boxing, you'd know how great that was. See, they conveniently neglect the point. The majority of people who paid for that fight aren't boxing purists. The majority of people who watched that fight aren't boxing purists, and the majority of people who watched that fight found it a snooze fest. And somehow the Mayweather apologists, Ty, they get offended, and they want to start talking about, well, if you knew about boxing, and the people who listen to Sports City, they know about sports. Well, guess what? There's a lot of people that listen to Sports City Chefs that aren't boxing purists. Maybe they just like listening to us talk sports. You ever think about that, Ty? Maybe we're that good that we're bringing people in who don't even follow sports, but they follow it now because of us. But hey, I'm just saying.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't. There wasn't a whole lot that happened in that fight, Chandler. It really, nobody got hurt. You couldn't even, at the end of the fight, you couldn't even tell anybody got actually punched. At the look on their faces, it was like they looked the same way going out the ring as they did coming in. So, you know, not to say that you just want to sit there and see somebody just get the crap beat out of them, but when you look at it in totality, it was like, what actually happened? And nothing did. Nothing. It was completely uneventful. And all of those casual fans,
will probably never pay for a fight again. Back
okay.
to you, Tyrone.
I'm guessing this is how it's going to be. If they go cry, what's the baby going to do? And the fact of the matter is, Taylor, I highly doubt anybody that's listening to us is a casual boxing fan. And if so, then come to the kitchen and tell me that you are. Then don't go out there digging for them. Believe me, if they're watching boxing, they know what they're seeing. And this is a perfect scenario for you, Chandler, just so I could keep you hushed about the situation. George Foreman said this morning, George Foreman, Big George, USA Olympic boxer, same stage that Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather, all of these guys, Sugar Ray was on, said, boxing is just like jazz. The better or the best that you can get it at, the less people appreciate it. Can't say it no better than that. And that's from Big George, y'all, a knockout artist, a knockout. But I'm not even going to go there because I already got to this debate before with this guy, and I didn't hear this yesterday. But now, here we go again, Mr. Knight, playing the fence. Okay, so SportsCityChefs.com, check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. I'll be back here tomorrow with the cookout. The grill will be lit. Stay tuned. In about 45 minutes or so, the Armor Champions will be here. We got the TV stars of the Sports City situation and network will be here. And the star of the show, Alan Fisher, will be the feature. So stay tuned on how that goes down. He has a show on AMC, The Game of Arms. If you haven't checked it out, their series premiere, I think, comes back around this month or next month. I'll let them explain it as the show comes on later on tonight. But on that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Work. My pop broke is good, they got addicted to work. Man, they say it's a shame. game, but as they say, it's a game. I made my way through the game. Rowdy Lord Youngin with that snotty nose youngin. Everybody Lord Youngin. The only youngin now hugging that pavement for paper. They were shoveling pavements for neighbors. I never made it to them 5-on-5.